I think many of us in this room know we're preparing for our 150th, and it creates a lot of thinking for me and all of the different people who are involved in not only what all the plans are, but for me, what is the role of the different generations in a congregation? Certainly, we're working hard to make sure young families know they're welcome, and though we don't have very many here this morning, that's an important message. I think a message that's equally important and hard is that a healthy institution is one that realizes the present is determined by and shaped and inherits its legacy from those who come before. And an organization, an institution, a community, a nation, a planet that can't understand the two-way nature of that is impoverished, because we are all here for the way that we stand on someone else's shoulders. It's an important lesson that we open ourselves to those who come before. And we're here to honor Cantor Shivers for that, and we're going to do that by honoring and recognizing the pillars of our community who have worked with Cantor Shivers professionally, a privilege I have not had, only as a lay leader now. But so I want to call up at this time just simply Rabbi to share some words. Rabbi Stamfer, then Rabbi Isaac will share some words on Linda's behalf.
As I stand here today, I'm filled with memories of the many years spent here in Neve Shalom. One of the most dramatic memories was when we engaged our first female cantor, Linda Shivers. We had had quite a history of cantors in the congregation before then. When I came in 1953, there was a lay member of the congregation, Morris Ale, who led our services for a number of years. And then we had our first professional cantor. I wonder how many of you remember him. I'll mention his name, and if you do remember, raise your hand. Arthur Yolkoff. Where are your hands? Arthur Yolkoff was our first professional cantor, a wonderful young man. And then came Chaim Feifel. I expect all your hands to go up practically. Chaim Feifel served us wonderfully for a number of years. And then came Mark Denkin. And Mark, more and more hands. Okay, good. So we had a long history of cantors, very capable individuals, and then came the choice for the next one. That was a period of time that we ought to remember. It was not that slam dunk kind of a selection. There was a good deal of discussion about the wisdom of selecting a woman cantor. But I'd like to share with you an episode that I experienced at approximately that time, which reflects what I'm talking about. Around that time, there was held the first rabbinical assembly convention on the West Coast in Los Angeles, where many hundreds of conservative rabbis gathered, as they do annually. There was going to be proposed at that time a very controversial vote whether the rabbinical assembly was to accept women rabbis as members. My feeling is that the reason they chose to introduce that vote at that time was because the West Coast was noted for being in that area much more liberal than the East Coast. We knew that the East Coast rabbis, by and large, were much more conservative than the conservative rabbis on the West Coast. And I'll never forget the address that Gershon Cohen, the chancellor of the seminary, gave at that event. He gave one of the most stirring addresses I've ever heard. And what he said basically was, we have just gone through one of the most tragic experiences in all of Jewish history, the Holocaust. 6 million Jews were sacrificed. Almost the entire Jewish population of Europe was destroyed. The future looked so bleak. We still didn't have the emerging state of Israel, which didn't really come about until the United Nations, rather earlier, until the League of Nations gave the mandate to Great Britain to create a Jewish national home in Palestine. And yet, look at the miracle that happened. Eventually, the State of Israel came into being, and today is really the core of Jewish life worldwide. And here we are at a conference to disenfranchise half of the Jewish world that's left. We're going to say that all of the Jewish men can serve as leaders in our congregations, but women are not entitled to do that. We're going to deliberately sacrifice and give up half of our resources, just at a time when we have lost the enormous number of Jews in the Holocaust. Can we even contemplate to do such a thing? There was a roar of applause. The next morning was going to be the vote. I went to bed feeling so confident. How could there be any other kind of a vote in the light of what he said and their response to him? But you know what happened the next morning? The rabbinical assembly voted it down. They voted it down because there were so many rabbis from the East who could not accept that change in Jewish life. I have rarely felt a sense of disappointment in my own movement as I did the following day. I just wanted to tell you that because to provide the fact, this was still a major issue in Jewish life. Well, today, thanks to Linda Shivers and to all of her colleagues, that thought is almost unbelievable today. It wouldn't enter our minds that we would even consider not having a woman clergy simply because she was a woman. Linda and all of her colleagues have demonstrated their great power and strength that they have restored to the Jewish community, and we are forever grateful. She certainly did that here in our congregation, and we remember all the wonderful achievements that she accomplished. So we're joining with her in celebrating the public recognition that she has received and have the opportunity of thanking her for what she has helped us to become. Thank you, Linda.
I suspect most of you are aware of why we're doing this here. Rabbi Stamfer and I both received our doctorates in a ceremony with our classes at the seminary. And so Linda Shivers was supposed to receive her doctorate in a ceremony with her class in New York. I don't remember how many months ago that was. In March. But Linda was unable to go. She had been in the hospital and therefore could not attend that ceremony. So we decided, why do we need a ceremony there? She served here, and we should do that ceremony here. Now I must tell you this is very unusual. Rabbis do not sing the praises of cantors. When rabbis get together at conventions, even before we talk about congregants, we talk about cantors. Oh, my cantor really does a 7.5 minute Sim Shalom. Can you believe that? Cantors are by reputation prima donnas. And as far as rabbis are concerned, cantors don't work very hard. Now, cantors have their own complaints, of course, about the dictatorial reputation of rabbis, that they take all of the spotlight. And to some degree, you know, that's true. I can't tell you how often I have received at Kiddush praise for the wonderful way in which a bar mitzvah or a bat mitzvah performed at their ceremony. I accept that thanks willingly, but it doesn't belong to me. It belonged for all those years to Cantor Shivers, who trained every bar and bat mitzvah. So here I came in 1993. You know, of course, that the most traumatic event usually in the life of a congregation is when they hire a new cantor, because in walks a cantor with melodies that nobody's familiar with and they have to get used to. As a matter of fact, it was really nice this morning. Rabbi Kosek said, "You remember all those melodies, right?" Oh, yeah. But you have to think about what a new rabbi coming into a congregation not only means to the congregation, but means to the cantor. Who's this new person that's going to come? What kind of personality is he or she going to have? What kind of, how am I going to deal with them? And I came with a great deal of anxiety as well. Not over the cantor, but over, to some degree, filling in small measure the shoes of my predecessor. But she was very gentle and very caring and introduced me to the Neve Shalom traditions. She marked up my siddur, right? This is what you do, right? This is how we've always done it. I think the only question I had was, there was a tradition here, and I assume that Rabbi Stamfer installed. The Friday night service was a little more reform, and the Saturday morning service was more traditional. There was a lot more English on Friday night and almost no English Saturday morning. And I guess the thing that was a bit odd to me was on Friday night, the congregation stood for the Shema, and on Saturday morning, the congregation sat for the Shema. Well, you know, that's a very old joke about whether you're supposed to, I'm not going to repeat that joke, whether you stand or you sit. But, you know, one way or another, we're either going to stand for the Shema or we're going to sit for the Shema. And there are all kinds of reasons why to do either. So we had to negotiate that. The other aspect that was really very new to me was Shacharit, Psuke de Zimra, and Shacharit for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and Mincha for Yom Kippur. What do congregations usually do on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? They hire an individual called a Baal Shacharit. They hire a professional to come in and lead the service because the cantor usually takes over, traditionally at Musaf, but usually for taking out the Torah on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And that's what we did in my former congregation. Sometimes we had lay people who would lead parts of the service, but that's how it was traditionally done. Not at Neve Shalom. Because Linda Shivers, and I don't know if that tradition precedes her or that she created, but Linda Shivers had rounded up scores of young people over the years. Every young person from bar mitzvah until the day they went to college. And even sometimes we snuck in a couple after college that came in and did this. It was a bit choppy because and not only did she have these young people doing it upstairs, she had it doing downstairs too. Whole scores. Sometimes they would come just to an English reading. Sometimes they would lead one prayer. But not only did she round up all these people, and not only did she train all these young people to do these parts of the service and to do it in the High Holiday Melody. I mean, you know, they may have known parts of these service from their bar and bat mitzvah, but now they had to learn it completely differently. But then she listened to every single one of them before they could come and do it. It was, I was amazed. I was really, really amazed at that and loved it. I loved that all these young people, first of all, it brought an awful lot of people to the service right at the beginning. As a matter of fact, at least one year, if not a couple of years, we handed out sheets with the names of all the kids. Page 153 is so-and-so, and page 154 is so-and-so, so that people could sit in the congregation and they could look, oh, that's so-and-so's son, or that's so-and-so's daughter. And it was really wonderful. Prima donna. Linda is anything but a prima donna. And hard to work with. Linda is the easiest person that I've ever had the privilege to work with as a cantor. She would come up with suggestions. She would listen to my complaints every once in a while. I didn't have too many complaints, but listen and incorporate whatever it was. And then there's the issue of hard working. I have never met a cantor, present cantors who aren't here, exception. But I have never met a cantor or worked with a cantor that worked harder than Linda Shivers. I had the tradition of spending a lot of time here and spending a lot of time in the office. But it was standard that I would leave after a meeting or an appointment. I would leave at 10, 10:15, and there was Cantor Shivers sitting in her office with, whether it was with a bar mitzvah child or an adult who was learning to read Torah or making appointments, sitting on the phone making appointments. It was rare that she left before 11 o'clock. in the evening. So this was someone who, throughout her professional career, was a really very hard worker, a wonderful teammate that I had through almost all the years I had here at Nevi Shalom. And what a privilege that when she went away, that she came back to lead services, to participate, to do all kinds of wonderful things. So Linda made reference to the end of her Haftarah, but I don't know if you listened to it. The very last words of her Haftarah were Todah v'chol zimra, thanksgiving and the sound of music. So that's what we had, that Linda really, really gave us. And it's always been a privilege for me as a rabbi, and I think for the congregation to really have Linda as our cantor. Mazel tov.
I want to make sure that Cantor Shivers has a moment to share some reflections also. So I'll keep my comments short. A little bit of history, just as she shared with me, which I think is important, because we've got to hear from Rabbi Stamfer about the historical place of Cantor Shivers as a trendsetter, as a female cantor early on in the movement and those shifts. Rabbi Isaac talked about her role here in the synagogue and her accomplishments, her character. And I never had the privilege of working with you that way. So I'll share a few of a little bit of background that I gathered, but I'll speak finally about you more as a friend than anything else. So, Rabbi Stamfer, you talked about how there was this huge foment within the movement as to whether we're going to let the other 50%, or I guess now with all the different genders, the other 48% or whatever it may be, in to participate in Jewish life. And very often, unfortunately, when a new class of people gains power, they forget that they once were powerless. They forget that the inclusion of them is meant to continue to ripple out to others, that it's a beginning and not the end. And I think that Cantor Shivers, one of the things that's so remarkable is that she really encouraged our girls to wear tefillin, to wear kippot, to wear things that were considered male ritual objects, and to make a claim for them. And there's a long discussion about that and whether they are male and not female and appropriate, but that's not relevant here. What's relevant is that you took your inclusion and your opportunity to lead, and you wanted to extend that to others. And we heard certainly about the choir as well. Last year, I don't know if any of you were here when our Kolenu choir came, but they brought back and sang on Friday night a service that had been composed by, I gotta look at my notes here, Robbie Solomon, and saying that again. So Cantor Shivers really was responsible for bringing in, for helping the synagogue commission special music and that service, and for really introducing us to a lot of important contemporary musicians, whether that was Debbie Friedman, who was here twice, whether that was Chava Alberstein, the band Pharaoh's Daughter, Alberto Mizrahi, that great set of pipes, Craig Taubman from L.A., Ramon Tassett, as well as many others of the Jewish world. So it was, again, a cantor who was not taking the public stage or being front and foremost, not at all a prima donna, but really wanting to expose us and include so many other people. And what's remarkable is how much of your legacy still is part of our community's DNA, and that's lovely, because things change and need to change, and simultaneously it's heartening to see that those things continue. And while we don't have as many, we were not able to identify as many teens to lead for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur as we wished, we still have a good solid core. They'll be doing some longer parts, so that tradition remains strong. But I didn't get to have you be my cantor as Rabbi Stamfer and Rabbi Isaac did. So you've just been my friend and moreover my neighbor. We live around the corner from one another, and I've been to your home, and you've been to my home. We were just there again recently for the neighborhood. We have a neighborhood party, a pool party once a year, and you're part of the neighborhood. And I can think just the wonderful times, Albert and Linda on Shabbat afternoon, I guess it's either before or after their Shabbat shluf, they go for a walk in the neighborhood. And there have been any number of times where they're walking right past my house. And we've even invited them in sometimes, like, oh, no, we're just going for a walk. But meanwhile, we sit on the little retaining wall or stand and talk for 30 or 40 minutes. They could have been inside by then, but, you know, that maybe then it would have been an hour and 40 minutes. I don't know. But Linda is just a guten neshama. She's just a good, decent human being. She's kind, and she's also direct, right? There's no beating around the bush. Linda will tell you what she's thinking, but it's done, like, with love. It's just so gentle, which I think Rabbi Isaac meant as well. And those are tremendous qualities of person, and I certainly appreciate them, and I'm glad that you were part of my life. So we're here to give you your doctorate degree, to bestow it upon you. And, you know, what the heck is an honoris causa anyway, a doctorate degree with honorary cause? It's nothing, and it's everything. You don't have to sit for classes. You don't have to write that dissertation. You don't have to defend the dissertation. You have to do something far more of far greater import, which is that you have to serve for decades. You have to take the knowledge you were given and apply it out in the world, and in this case, in the Jewish world, as in, I was going to say an Eved Hashem, I guess it's an Avdat Hashem, as a faithful servant of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people. And the doctorate with cause is a doctorate that comes out of all of the knowledge that you gain from a life of service. And there's nothing in a classroom that can ever give you that. And so, in a way, though, the classroom learning behind such a document is not the same, to me, the on-the-job training is so much farther. Because I got to tell you, and Rabbi Isaac hinted at it, working for the Jews isn't always the easiest thing to do. Just saying.
Thank you so much. Oh. So I was one of a line of cantors here in Portland, and I was shocked to find out that when I was here, everybody I met told me so much about Cantor Feifel, and so I thought he had been here forever, but he'd actually been here a very short time. I think he was only here 4 years. But he had a great influence on the congregation. And so I'm here, of all the cantors that have been here, I've actually been here the longest. I was here 23 years as a cantor. And I want to thank all of you for being here today. It's such a warm, wonderful group of people, people I've known for a long, long time. And so many of you have been to my house for dinners or Pesach or whatever. And there's been so many. I invited over the years. I had so many people over for dinner that I don't even remember. I mean, somebody came up to me not long ago and said, do you remember when I came to your house for dinner? And I'm like, who are you? You know, like, But actually afterwards I remembered. And of course, so many bar and bat mitzvot, that, you know, b'nai mitzvah, that I've known so many people who've gotten to know your families, whether through b'nai mitzvah or weddings or funerals or whatever the occasions, anniversaries. I mean, been fabulous. All the ways I've been part of lives of so many people in this congregation, and this is my home, and this will always be my home. You know, this is, Neve Shalom is so dear to my heart. And as we get ready for the 150th, I think back so much to all the fabulous things we did for the 120th. And I hope that it'll be, if it's even one-tenth as amazing as that was, it'll be fabulous. It was such an amazing time. And there have been so many amazing times here at Neve Shalom with so many amazing people. And it's just, I'm just so happy that things worked out this way, that we could do this here today. Originally, when I was supposed to go in March, they said from the beginning that you could only get the doctorate if you showed up in person. And so when I found out that I wasn't going to be able to go, I asked them if they would present it to my brother, who was already planning to go. And they said yes. So that was great. And actually, this is the first year that they've given honorary doctorates to any women cantors. So, you know, since we... And I just really was so sad that I couldn't go. I kept pleading with the doctor, and he kept saying, "You're not going." But I want you to know that if any of you get sick, don't call me. This honorary doctorate won't help you. Thank you again, and I won't keep you any longer, and thank you.